Let's take a few minutes and focus on our breath. Flowing in and out. And with a deep in breath. Today, we're going to keep on keeping on. We're going to move into what Satchidananda says, the most important and oft-quoted section of the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, the description of the enlightened person. The enlightened person, which always makes me wonder, are enlightened persons just permanently enlightened? Are they enlightened sometimes and not other times? Interesting. I think our images of an enlightened person is someone who is permanently enlightened. They're just there. Yes.
I think, from what I've been just learning and exposed to myself, a person can be completely enlightened. That's extremely rare. I think more often it's bits and pieces, and sometimes people aren't even aware. They don't know what to call it, but they'll have moments of enlightenment. And then,
yes.
You know, I think... For me, I think it's become a process. The most I can hope for is more moments.
More moments. That's our challenge. More moments. Arjuna says, you seem to be talking a lot about the theory and the practice. Are there people who have achieved this goal, who act with this realization underneath everything they do? That's the question.
As I stuff my face with sugar.
Have some more sugar. Everything they do, whom you would call enlightened people, what would they look like? Are there people whose minds are always steady and tranquil? Who perform perfect actions always. Perfect actions always. A perfect action is an action which is not judged. If you don't judge it, it's perfect. When you layer judgment on it, it loses its perfection. If so, Arjuna says, let me hear about them. All right. So here's the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 2, 51 and 52. Start to hear about. So the Gita says, chapter, sloka 51, enjoying equanimity of mind, peacefulness of mind, enjoying equanimity of mind, renouncing the fruits of their actions, free of the bondage of rebirth, which is suffering in this consciousness. The wise undoubtedly go to a stainless state, a place beyond sorrow. We might call it heaven. Equanimity of mind, renouncing fruits of actions, free of suffering.
Good morning.
Good morning, good morning. The wise undoubtedly go to a stainless state, which we might call heaven. This is the Bhagavad Gita describing what an enlightened person is like. And we were just discussing, I wonder when a person is enlightened, if they're permanently like that, or if they sometimes are, sometimes aren't, sometimes a little more.
For me, it feels more of like just moments of tranquil stillness, where I'm in harmony without the words.
The interesting thing is, as life arises, can we maintain that harmony even when life delivers some rather upsetting or disturbing or painful or suffering experiences? According to the Gita, enjoying equanimity of mind. The mind is in a state of equanimity. Our minds are pretty reactive, aren't they? Equanimity. Renouncing the fruits of their actions. Again, tough. Making our minds up that we're going to do something with a plan, but not committed to grasping any particular result. And not setting our mind up so that if we don't get a particular result, we're going to react. Planning on it and being open to whatever the moment reveals. Renouncing the fruits of their actions. Free of the bondage of rebirth or suffering. The wise undoubtedly go to a stainless state, a place beyond sorrow. That's 51. Let's go on. Here's 52. Sloka 52. When your understanding transcends delusion, your understanding transcends delusion. What does he mean by that? What you stand under transcends delusion. In this point of view, we experience the real, what is permanent and doesn't change, in a deep state of meditation. A deep state of meditation. Can we bring that non-delusional experience to our everyday life? Because in our everyday life, things are always changing. We're changing. Climate changes. Politics change. Things are changing. And in the Indian perspective, in some sense, that's Maya, M-A-Y-A, Maya, or delusion. Yes, it's real in the sense that we act in the real world, but to some extent, it's ephemeral. When your understanding transcends delusion, then you are indifferent to things you hear about. Then you are indifferent. So whatever you read in the news or hear on the television, or someone tells you, it's not that you're not present, but there's a certain perspective that you maintain at all times. So indifferent, not in the sense that you're not involved, but indifferent in that these are just things going on in the world.
Almost like non-biased listening for the first time.
Non-violent listening. So many different aspects to being indifferent to all the sorts of things that we hear. Indifferent to things you hear about and things yet to be heard about. For example, the most sacred scripture. Indifferent, not attached to things you hear about or things yet to be heard about. Rather, in this sense of having transcended what your sense organs deliver to you. So you have indifference in the sense of being able to stand back or stand under. and you step back from your own mind and thus understand all things, as the Tao Te Ching teaches. All right. Let's see what Sat Chidananda has to say about this, because it seems a little airy-fairy, perhaps difficult. Hard to put into practice. Sat Chidananda says, when you've understood what it is to be understood clearly without any doubt, then you become indifferent to things you hear about those yet to be heard of. I'm not sure I get this. I wrote this down from his book. I wonder if I made a typo. He says, when you've understood what is to be understood clearly, without any doubt, then you become indifferent to things you hear about, those yet to be heard of. I think what he's getting here is the difference between having an experience and having thoughts about the experience. Having an experience, hearing what others say about the experience. It's sort of, for me, like when you go to a concert. I like to go to concerts, but I never ever look at the Washington Post and read the reviews afterwards. Mm-hmm. I don't want to hear
what the
reviewer said about the concert.
Right.
What if I loved it and it was wonderful?
That's it, that's all that.
And he said, oh, this was bad.
Inferior.
Right.
And points out things that I don't want to hear about. So rather than subject myself to having to feel indifferent about things I hear about, I just don't read that. So here Sat Chidananda goes on about an enlightened person. If such a person hears something, he or she can say, well, I know that already. I'm already in my peace. Already in my peace. I'm still having trouble with this, even though it's what he says. He goes on, and if another says, oh, but there is something more to be heard, then the first one can reply, I don't have to hear anymore. These are the qualities of a person who has reached the height. So, not that we're not engaged in conversation with each other, we're polite. We sometimes engage in small talk when we want to be congenial. And yet a part of us stays reserved. Reserved. We may notice a part of us is making judgments on the things we hear about. Someone may tell us something, we have a judgment about that. Oh, they're wrong, they're right. And yet if we transcend it, those thoughts in our mind, and are grounded in our equanimity, we can just notice that the mind is making judgments. Mind is making judgments. And we can just step back and allow a little smile to crease our lips and just say to someone, well, I got it, I got it. I understand what you're saying. I'm hearing you. To learn the art of non-judgmental talk. Sometimes when people say, well, this is what I think, this is right and that's wrong, our reactive way of thinking is, well, I agree that's right or that's wrong, or wait a minute, no, I think this way and you're wrong. And rather, can we step back into our equanimity, noticing that this is just the turn of perhaps Maya or delusion, even though it's hard to recognize that in the moment, and say, I hear you, I got it. I got it. I really appreciate knowing what you have to say, so that we can stay in a state of respect for another person's point of view, even though we don't agree with it at all. Maybe you have family members like I do that are of an opposite political persuasion than you are, and have some strong opinions about their political persuasion, and you have some strong opinions about the opposite political persuasion. And if you love this person, they're a member of your family, and when they have this particular conversation about their political persuasion, you can't help but get a little upset because you thought so much about your political persuasion. That's where you've gone, so you get a little upset. So how to deal with your mind and maintain respect for the person that you love and respect for who you are. Compassion for yourself and what you stand for, and compassion for someone else who's doing their best. That's the art of peaceful conversation and learning.
And you have said that love and defined as many ways, but the three qualities was respect, compassion, and was it understanding? What was the third one?
You're thinking of the three treasures?
Yeah.
Simplicity,
yeah.
Patience, and
compassion.
Uh-huh.
But there was three weeks ago, you had defined the qualities of love as respect, compassion. There was a third one. I think it was
generosity.
Generosity. Gotcha.
Yes, our idea of love tends to go towards what we see on television.
Yeah.
Love is something you fall into. Hope you don't hit your head like I did. When you fall. Something you fall into. Something that happens to you out of the blue. And you fall. And you don't seem to have much to do with it. You just have fallen into it. We do realize that sometimes we meet someone and we just notice that we have an attraction to that person. Sometimes we meet someone and notice that we have a distraction to that person. Person distracts us. We're not attracted to that person. I remember going to parties when I was younger, and I could look around the room and I'd get the energy of someone that I felt was a soulmate. I just felt it. And I would get the energy of others who I felt I wouldn't be comfortable spending a lot of time with. So we do have those energetic states that we experience. Maybe that's what falling in love means. We just sort of open up to a person. We're ready for it. And perhaps they are too, so that energy interchanges. And there's another kind of love, which is the love that's talked about in the Bible and in the spiritual traditions. That's a different sort of love. It's not a love we fall into. It's a love we must train ourselves to experience. Train ourselves to experience. And what we have to train ourselves to do is to let go of certain attitudes and positionalities that we have to experience that love. And the three components that we can remember to experience that sort of love is, can we respect another person just for who they are? Doesn't mean we have to agree with their point of view, does it? No. But can we respect them as a human being that came into this world just like we did, will be taken from this world just like we will, and is perhaps doing their best right now? Our reactive mind isn't going to bring that up. Can we remember to respect that person? Can we treat that person with an attitude of generosity? Generosity meaning perhaps the reactions we're having are just reactions. Maybe there's something I haven't seen yet, something I don't know yet with regard to this person. That's generosity. And finally, compassion. This is an individual like me who's doing their best, doing their best. Respect, generosity, and compassion are the attributes of spiritual love. When Jesus said, love your neighbor, that's what he meant. To treat them with respect, treat them with generosity and compassion. You don't have to fall to do it.
Could you give us an example of compassion in that sense, with the context of loving thy neighbor?
Can someone give us an example of compassion with regard to a neighbor?
Maybe just time to listen respectfully without.
I think it has something to do with putting ourselves in their shoes. Can we transfer from our own reactions and imagine that we're in their shoes, so we're looking at the situation from a different perspective? What if we were in their shoes? What if we had their upbringing? What if we had their experience of life? I wonder how I would behave perhaps the same way. So when you come to that way of looking at life, I might behave and think exactly the same way if I were in their shoes. That's compassion.
Thank you.
All right, so here's Satchitananda talking about the qualities of a person who has reached the height. In the Upanishads, the Upanishads are the great ancient stories of India, it is said, for enlightened people there is nothing that is to be done or not to be done. Here we're getting into a different consciousness. We'll look at this. For enlightened people, there is nothing that is to be done or not to be done. We've had discussions about this before, about doing, willfulness, and our ego mind. Let's go on. Such people have risen above these duties of doing or not doing. Bear with us, let's go on here. They have no personal responsibilities. We say, wait a minute, I've got personal responsibilities. From another standpoint, we don't have personal responsibilities. The universe is in charge. The universe is in charge, and at every moment I'm surrendering to the universe and what's mine to do. So in that sense, it's not a personal responsibility, not a personal. I don't take it personally. It's like the second agreement, don't take anything personally. It's a responsibility, but not a personal responsibility. Rather, it's a responsibility to be in alignment with what the universe is offering. Not my will, but God's will.
That's another question.
Oh, is that a question? No, it's just that reminds me of the saying. I've heard it said several different ways. Before enlightenment, make bread, chop wood. After enlightenment, make bread, chop wood.
Yes.
But the difference is you're doing it in a different state. But you still have the chores. On this plane, we still have to make bread and chop wood.
If
that's what ours to do, correct.
I would just simply add, make homemade bread without the preservatives, without the chemical additives, without the processed oils.
And don't chop down too many trees.
Right. Only as much as we need for the season.
All right, so here's Satchitananda. No personal responsibilities, and there's nothing they have to do or should not do. Rather, always surrendering to the will of the universe. This do and don't do no longer affect such people. Do and don't do. Do and don't do in the sense of morality. This is right, this is wrong, so on. Rather surrendering to what comes up naturally for us. I have a verse from the Tao Te Ching next, which presents a little different perspective on this. Tao Te Ching, chapter 2. When people see some things as beautiful, other things become ugly. Our judgmental mind. As soon as that one's beautiful, it's because they don't look like. When people see some things as good, other things become bad. In our judgmental minds, when we declare good, it's a comparison with something that is bad. I know in unity we often talk about God is good, everything is good, and so on. From another perspective, can we let go of the good and the bad altogether and just be? Just be the I am presence without interjecting it's good. Because the way the good Lord created our minds is, as soon as we say this is good, the mind automatically envisions something else as not good, bad. And whenever we have the good-bad, it's a veil between us and experiencing who we really are. That's what the Tao Te Ching is getting at here. Let's go on. Therefore, the master, that's us, the master, or the enlightened person. Therefore, the master acts without doing anything and teaches without saying anything in the sense of being willful. Without doing anything, rather, as you point out, the enlightened person still chops wood, does what they're supposed to do, but not in the sense that they are doing it. Rather, it's what is theirs to do, it's what is given to them to be done.
I think you can see that sometimes just with people, the different energy they have. Mm. You know, they can be doing the same thing, and you will just see completely
different energy.
Completely different results, in a sense, or completely different experience, both
yes.
for them and anybody observing.
Yes. In yoga, it's called the practice of karma yoga, which is dedicating everything you do to the divine or to God, dedicating everything you do. So you're not doing anything, in a sense. Rather, you're dedicating what you're doing to God and letting what is yours to do flow from you naturally. And when you do that, you, quote, do things without attachments or value judgments hanging on to it. This is what's yours to do. And if later on someone says, oh, I don't like the way you did that, you know, you did that improperly, because you did it in a state of it, that's what was yours to do, you're not affected by that judgment so much. Maybe a little bit. But you can step back from it. Because in the moment, that was what yours to do was, and you did your best. Without willful thinking. The master acts, so act, that's doing, without doing anything, and teaches without saying anything. Things arise, and she lets them come. Things disappear and she lets them go. Rather than worrying about what's going to come up for us and worrying about what's left us, we allow the universe to be okay with us. She has but doesn't possess, acts but doesn't expect. The difference between having and not possessing is we have whatever we have, our things, our body, our relations. And when the universe changes that situation, that's okay too. It's okay to have, and when the universe changes and we no longer have, that's okay too. That's meaning we don't possess it. Acts but doesn't expect. We've talked about that.
there's a process. I think there's that, you know, when I listen to you hear, when I hear you say that she has but doesn't possess, and then acts but doesn't expect. So when that moment happens, like if I lost my great aunt or my father and my mother, there's a point at which that there's a feeling body of mourning, the sadness that just envelops.
That's natural.
Yeah, and so to process that, I think is a gateway to the freedom of letting go.
The universe gave you grief. Thank you, God.
And I think a lot of that is just getting to that point of mourning, of whatever form it speaks to each one.
Yes, whenever I read this verse, she has but doesn't possess, I'm a gadget guy. I'm a technical guy, and I'm a man. I have gadgets and cars and computers,
sure.
Gadgets. And I think about this gadget. Not this one. This is the one I got. But another gadget over in the Apple store that's different than this one.
Bigger,
it's a little
faster.
Bigger, it's a little faster, etc.
More memory.
And I have that gadget. I have it. But I don't possess it. That's why I keep it in the Apple store. I have it. I just don't possess it. So it's happy in the Apple store. I'm happy here.
Maybe the trick would maybe the trick would be to possess it in the sense of having it in your hand, but not really having it. No, forget it. It worked in my brain, but it doesn't work once I talk about it.
I've gone to the Apple store and held this different gadget in my hand. And it was just a gadget in my hand. And then I can fondly remember it there. Something I have, but it's not in my possession. And the last of the verse is, when her work is done, she forgets it. That's why it lasts forever. It's like a child. When our work is done rearing the child, can we let it go? No, we're not going to forget our child, but can we forget the raising and the rearing of the child? No, let that go. And then that lasts forever. All right, back to Satchidananda. Here's Satchidananda. But until that time comes when you reach that height, certain things are to be followed. He talked about this great state of enlightenment, but he recognizes not everybody's there yet. So how do we get there? You have to do certain things and stop doing some other things on the path. Mostly these are the two guidelines. You have to do certain things and stop doing some other things. And in our spiritual practices and readings, we try and find out and better understand what's ours to do and what's ours not to do. But there's another one also. Okay. Oops. Last sloka here, chapter 2, sloka 53. When your mind, which has been tossed about by conflicting opinions, becomes still and centered in equilibrium, then you experience yoga. Yoga meaning unity with the divine. Unity with the divine. Then you experience yoga. When your mind, which has been tossed about by conflicting opinions and judgments and reactions, becomes still and centered in equilibrium, then you experience yoga. It doesn't mean you don't think anymore. It doesn't mean you don't think anymore. I have a hand and I use my hand to do certain things. When I'm not doing those things, I let my hand rest. I have a mind. Sometimes I apply my mind to something that the mind is useful in doing, figuring something out. And when I figure that out, or no longer need to give mindful attention to that, can I let my mind rest still and centered in equilibrium? Can I learn the art of having my mind return to stillness and equilibrium when I don't have use for it? And we know that a practice of meditation is helpful in learning that skill. Right?
Yes. Excellent.
All right, let's see what Satchitananda has to say about this. And we're getting close to closure time here. He says it's a beautiful sloka. After being tossed back and forth by so many conflicting views in ourselves, outside ourselves, slowly you were pushed up and up. One day you rise to the heights, then you're no longer tossed between these dualities of differing opinions, for and against, good and bad. You may still have them, but somehow you're not tossed about by them. It's a different energy, as Kathy pointed out.
Right.
You've got them, they're part of who you are, but you're not at the end of a rope and being swung about by them. You just have them, they don't possess you.
Right. We make the bread without Sam's commentary.
When your intelligence is shaken by the conflicting opinions of others, don't get upset over it, because you know the truth. Don't get upset because you know the truth. The truth is, we came in this world through grace. We're leaving the world through grace. We're here to experience life as it shows up for us. Can we show up in life with respect, generosity, and compassion? So no matter what our mind does, we're not on the end being swung about. We're always able to return to that state, not getting upset. Just accept their opinions as mere words. Just accept the opinion as words. Sounds hard to do, doesn't it?
I was at a party.
It's an ongoing progress.
I was at a party recently, and a friend of mine, who I know has different opinions than mine politically, literally came at me at the party wanting to, like, engage me. And in the past, I would be more sucked in, but this time I said, I'm not going there. And I said that to her. I said, I'm not going there. I said, we profoundly disagree, you know, with each other. We're just going to have to agree to disagree. And I just did not get sucked in, but it's very difficult.
Yes.
It's very difficult, especially when it's a friend.
Of course. Can we have a cheerful attitude towards it? Look, I hear you. I hear what you're saying.
Yeah.
Can we... I love you so much. Can we agree to disagree?
Yeah.
Can we agree to disagree? You're my dearest friend.
Yeah.
Which takes the sting out of it. Also, what you're doing here through respect is, people have a natural inclination that to be loved, other people need to agree with them. So if there's someone they love and want love and respect back from them, they feel compelled to get agreement with all their various positions.
And we learned that during our upbringing in terms of
training.
Sure. Right.
So if we can give the love that's underneath this urge to make you agree with them and give them the love, the urge dissipates.
Yeah.
I love you, and I respect you, I hear everything you said. Can we agree to disagree? So in that loving statement, you satisfy that person's need.
That's wonderfully said. I'm going to quote you on that. I love that one.
Yeah.
Very good. Thank you for bringing that up, Kathy.
Are we ready to close? Anything?
Love the wisdom. Thank you so much.
So we close with making the sound of Om together. Let's take 3 deep breaths. And the deep in breath. Shanti, shanti, shanti.
Thank you, Steve.
Go in peace.